The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And some people say it's more important than mindfulness because it's a foundation for mindfulness practice, for meditation. And one form of generosity is volunteering. So this is all a long way of saying that we're going to have, Max and I are going to have an evening to focus on this practice of volunteering that is a big part of IMC. And everyone's welcome to come. It should be a nice time. It'll be a time to appreciate those volunteers who come who are volunteering. And anybody's welcome to come, whether you've been a volunteer in the past, you are now, you're thinking about it in the future, or you have absolutely no interest in being a volunteer and you want to learn why you don't want to do it. or you're just interested more generally about the approach to volunteering, the philosophy of it, or something we have here. And maybe you're more interested in volunteering elsewhere, but it's kind of an interesting angle to hear what we have to say about it. And then on Friday, we have this Dharma Practice Day. And this is the beginning of the year-long series, or 9-month, 10-month series. And the reason I want to mention it is that for people who come regularly Sunday morning or Monday evening, sometimes there's not a lot of chance to connect to community here. Some people will come for a long time and feel a little bit out of sorts around that very point because they come and they listen and it's kind of, a little bit, not such an easy chance to get to know people, have conversations with people about the practice and things like that. And so one of the ways to do that is these Fridays once a month called Dharma Practice Days, where we have... It's a way of approaching or getting involved in some theme, some aspect of Buddhist practice in a multifaceted way where we, I'll do a little bit of teaching through the day. We often do guided meditations around the theme. We have discussions around the theme and we sometimes do exercises around it. And there's also a fair amount of dividing up into pairs or small groups in order to have more focused discussions about the theme. And some people find it very meaningful to have these kinds of conversations about important topics that normally we don't have a chance to have in our normal life in a focused way. And also it's a way of getting to know people in the community here and through this, these conversations, these ways of being together. I know that many of you can't do it because it's on a Friday, it's time of work, and I apologize to promote something you can't go to. It just turned out that the way my life worked out, that was the only time I could offer it on Fridays. And originally I started offering on Fridays to support the day-longs that we have sometimes on Saturday. And then more people would come to the Friday than they would come to the day-longs. So I realized that not that many people would do both 2 days in a row. But. So that was a lot of much more information maybe than you wanted, but... It's an important part of what we do here, and I thought I would share it with you. And since we are a smaller group today than usual because of the Labor Day weekend, I'm very happy about that because it allows us to do something different. And I think when it's a bigger group, it's somehow it seems more appropriate for me to talk more, maybe have a few questions. When it's a smaller group, it's nice to do something different. And what I'm feeling myself like today is to hear a little bit from you and your concerns, your questions about Buddhism, questions about practice, questions about mindfulness. What's up for you and what's important for you? So, I get a sense what's happening with you and I'll try to respond or address or whatever your questions might be or the topics you want to explore or discuss. And it might be nice for other people in the room also besides me to hear what's up for people and what's important. So if you're up for that, I'd love to hear some questions, some thoughts that you'd like to have addressed this evening. Up here, this... And I think it's... Yeah. So. Maybe it's low on battery. Is it was working for Liz here. Can you? It's on the side.
How's that? All right. So, as I was saying, I've been practicing maybe a year, and I'm finding it's. I seem to be fairly normal that I breathe a little and think a lot. And then after the meditation is over, I listen to you and you have all these wonderful things to think about. When are we supposed to think about those things?
Well, if I may ask you a question first.
Yeah, you always do that.
What are you hoping to accomplish in thinking about the talk and what's come up?
Oh, well, I listen to you, and you're promising freedom, and that appeals to me. So I'm thinking that if I can meditate perfectly, and then think these good thoughts,
if you meditate perfectly, you probably won't become free. You probably freedom requires certain amount of things not going the way you want or expect. Things went exactly the way you want, you probably won't become free, because you have to learn how to be free in a world which is things aren't really working out so well. That's another way of saying the Buddhism says that that there's a fundamental unsatisfactoriness in life where life can't really meet all of our ideals, expectations, wants, desires. And so if we do it perfectly, then we don't have a chance to meet that part of us that is... it's more difficult to set ourselves free from our desires to have it perfect. But anyway, I interrupted you. You can continue. So what are you trying to accomplish in thinking about the talk?
Well, to be honest, the first thing that I'm trying to accomplish is to be calm. I'm often not calm, and my experience in mindfulness before and since I've gotten here is that the meditation is one of the best ways I have found to get out of my anxiety and to become present. And the practice, boring as it can be, results sometimes in that capacity to be much more present than has been my norm. And that has been a desire and a goal of mine, to be present.
Nice.
Anxiety is not being present. So that's a major interest of mine.
So two interests, to be present and also to be calm.
Yeah, to me it seems they're very much the same.
Closely, I agree. And so then, those times when you do come here, when you meditate and you do become calm and you feel present, what have you learned that takes you away from that, that brings the anxiety back and agitation back?
I think I have learned to see, to notice the anxiety arising in the course of the day. And I've noticed, become more able to see the fear that's behind it, and oftentimes that the fear doesn't really have a lot of value. And there's a threshold. If I get beyond the threshold, there's not much going back. But more often than certainly used to be the case, I can stop it before I get over that threshold.
Wonderful. That's very nice. So if you're, as you say, one of the important things you're trying to do is to be calm and present, calm presence, present calm. Do you have any set, how does thinking about the talk support that? Or does thinking about the talk hinder that?
Some of the principles that you've talked about that have impressed me the most are compassion, loving kindness, and kind of the blessing of those things in my experience in mind is that it takes me away from myself and
nice.
Puts my focus on something other than myself. You kind of just flips. Me right away from fear.
So then, as you leave here and you've heard these teachings, I can imagine a few possibilities. If you're calm and feel present, maybe you're better off staying with that than thinking about the talk. Because it just takes you away from, maybe it might take you away from that calm and that presence. So just leave the talk here. Or trust that something went in and it's there in the storeroom in the mind, and it's doing its thing, it's working you, and it'll have an effect. You don't have to think about it anymore, and it'll pop up maybe some other time. However, there might be some times when you leave and you find yourself starting to think a little bit about the anxiety of work the next day, and you say, I haven't crossed the threshold, there's a choice here. I can come back and let go, that's nice. You drive a little bit further because you have to go drive across the bay, right? So you have a long drive. And so then you feel the anxiety building up but it's below the threshold, so you come back. That's nice. A third time it happens and you're able to bring yourself back and calm down. And you say, I think I need to do something with my thoughts. I would like to do something with my thoughts that takes me away from my self-concerns that seems to be getting me anxious. Why don't I think about that talk? And so that might be a purpose for thinking about it. And so you have this long drive. It seems like a great time to think about the talk, maybe. And then how to think about Dharma, if you read a book or hear a talk, is an important thing. And one of the ways to think about it is to ask yourself the question, how is this talk helpful for me? How are these teachings supportive for me in my life? As opposed to, is this really true? Do I like it? Do I not like it? That wasn't as good as a speaker last week and seemed to say it differently in a better way. There's all kinds of ways of making, having opinion, being, entering in the world of opinions and judgments that is not really supportive for the practice. What's most supportive for the practice is ask the question, even if the person, maybe me, gave a horrible talk. It doesn't help you to go home irritated about it. I drove all the way over here, it was a terrible talk, and Gail should have prepared better. That doesn't support you to continue with that kind of mindset. What supports you is say, that was a bad talk. But for my sake, how am I going to reflect on what was said so that I can benefit from it? There must be a kernel in there. Or there must be some point in my life where that applies. Let me try to understand how it supports me. You don't have to agree with it, but you're looking for where it's applicable, where it's practical. So that's a nice way of thinking about the teachings. So does that give you a little bit of ideas in answer to your question?
Yes.
Great,
yeah,
thank you.
I like that. Thanks for letting me off the hook about thinking about what you say.
Great. So I saw a hand over there before in the back. If we can pass the mic. Oh, there. Yeah, Abraham in the back row, I think. Well, you can go ahead. Yeah. Well, the person behind you had her hand up first, so, and then we can do you.
Thank you, Gail. I'm wondering if you have something that's up for you. Do you have a question that you have that you'd like an answer to? Is there a way of holding that that you would suggest in meditation so that it would allow us to somehow have access an answer to that?
So if there's an important question, how to practice with it, how to live with it, and how to do so in meditation. A nice thing to do in meditation is to, as you go into meditation, you know, during the day, you have something that's important you want to reflect on or have an answer to. And then when you start meditating, try to put it aside. And so you're not thinking about it at all. But see if you can kind of get into the practice of meditation, getting calms, steady, stabilize the mind. Maybe have the thinking kind of recede a little bit from the background so you're pretty centered in yourself. And maybe near the end of the meditation, then drop the question in. And don't try to answer it. Don't think about it. Just drop and maybe repeat the question a few times, but slowly, and then see what bubbles up. See what bubbles up in your body, what kind of physical response you get, emotional response you get, and see also what goes on in your mind, your thinking mind. How does your thinking mind respond without you starting to think? And so what bubbles up? And then you might drop it in again into the mind, and see what comes. And then in the last minutes of the sitting, you might think about it more conventionally and see if there's something. Because people have a different perspective in which to address important issues after the mind is calm and steady. So that can happen in daily meditation. It's particularly an advice I give to people who go on retreat. It's fairly common for people go on like in a 7-day retreat and come with some big concern they have in their life. You know, should I change my job? Should I get married? What should I do? And it's a really important question. And so it's really in the forefront. And I suggest to them that they're also put it off until, don't think about it for the duration of the retreat. For 6 days, don't think about it. And then the 7th day, think about it, because you'll have different eyes, you'll have a different understanding, a whole different perspective that's going to be much more productive than if you think about it now. So I'm a little bit offering a carrot to, you know, so they get, you know, put it aside, put it up on the shelf for now. And I do really believe that that at the end of a meditation session or an end of a 7-day retreat or something, that there's a whole different perspective that opens up new windows on the situation that we didn't have before. So now in front of you here.
Hi, I have a rather basic question. I was wondering if you could speak about, you know, meditating in a group versus kind of meditating on your own in your own practice, and, you know, if you wanted to share some thoughts about that.
Great, thank you. But before I answer, can I ask you why you're asking? Why is this important for you? It's an important question, I appreciate it, and I'm happy to answer, but I just get a sense.
I'm not sure exactly. I've done both. It's just something that came up for me today as I was here, and I thought it was very nice to do it in a group, but I was just kind of wondering in terms of, I don't know, your thoughts about it. I think in the past it was different because I hadn't done it with other people. It had always been a solitary practice for myself. If it was with people, it was always kind of an introductory thing, like they teach it to you so that you can go home and do it by yourself. You know, it was not like something that you go and practice with other people.
Uh-huh.
And I've done all sorts of different practices with meditation, and some of those ended up maybe a little too deep for my tolerance at that time.
Uh-huh.
I was frightened, but I wasn't actually thinking about that when I came up with this question.
Great.
I just thought, oh, it's interesting. It feels different to be together, and what, you know.
Great. Isn't that nice? So there can be a difference between meditating alone and meditating in a group. And the differences can be different from different people and different times in our life. It's different. So I benefited a lot from meditating alone. My first few years of meditation, I mostly did it alone. And And then I did it for many years in the monasteries, where we always meditated together in a group, and did a lot of retreats as a group. And I, one of the things that was nice about meditating in group was I needed less discipline to show up, to do it. I found that it supported me. You know, I didn't get restless sitting there because, oh, you know, like, you know, is it, when is it over? Should I stop now? Or, you know, this is boring. Or, you know, I have more interesting things to do, and I can defrost a freezer. But you know, in a group, there's a certain degree, a hopefully healthy kind of group momentum or group kind of sense of being part of a group that supports, you know, like keep at it, do it. You know, it's important, it's valuable to do it. You're not the only one who's weird. There's a lot of people who are weird, and so it feels a little bit nice, you know, that you're not strange because, you know, we're all doing it together. And so I found that was very helpful for me when I first, my early period in the monastery. And then I went to Thailand to practice there, and I didn't know what I was going to, but the abbot just sent me off, basically off in this wilderness area in a cabin. He said, go out there and practice by yourself and come and see me tomorrow. And that went on for 10 weeks, you know, off practice by myself. And I very quickly realized I didn't have anybody around me to support me to practice. And then the task was to develop a new level of discipline inside for that kind of, to find the motivation within myself rather than have it from the group. And that was a very growing experience for me in my practice. Some people are hypersensitive about people in a group, and it's just too much. They pick up too many vibes, or they're just too, makes them agitated to be meditating in a group. But they come anyway because they want to hear the teachings, or they want to just be around other people who are meditating, just because there's something that kind of gets passed by osmosis. The fact that other people are kind of doing the same thing or sharing the same values. And so even though they leave a little more agitated than they came, in the bigger picture, they benefit from it. Some people, the agitation that comes from being in a group is something they want to work with because it's something that doesn't have to be there. So they realize it's a challenge. So they come to the group in order to work through it, see if they get the other side so they can be peaceful in the group. Some people find that it's really hard to meditate at home alone. And the motivation, the support is not there. And so they come here and they feel the support. It's easier to do it. And so some people get kick-started where they come here and it's easier than the rest of the week to keep it up because they have some momentum practicing in the group. Some people really pick up the vibes of the group in a good way, and it just they find themselves, even though they sit at home every day, when they come here, or we're sitting with a group, they get so much quieter and stiller, and more focused and more concentrated because of the group kind of dynamics that goes on, or something, the association of being around other people and meditating. So what I'm trying to convey to you is that there's it's very individualistic how it works. And it's I think it's important to kind of sense and experiment and see what's most supportive for you, and only you're the one who can in the end decide what's most beneficial for you, to do more meditation alone, more meditation in a group, some healthy combination of both. Great, thank you. Then up here in the front.
I just, in general, I have a lot of visual images cognitively, and lately, the past few months, will come just out of the blue of something from way back, like I'm 8 or something, and there's some memory, and because, I don't know if it's because I'm, meditating, but it's so vivid and poignant, I kind of go in it. I mean, I really engage. It's like normally just kind of go below my level of consciousness, but it's right there, and I feel like I'm there, and you kind of, it makes me really want to engage with it. And I don't know if that's really the right approach. I mean, I can walk around in there. I was like, what city was that? What was I doing? And who was I with? And is this important? And that kind of thing. Is this normal? Or,
Well, it's certainly normal to have unexpected memories surface, and things that you haven't thought about since it happened, maybe sometimes, you know, back in childhood, will suddenly bubble up. And sometimes there are difficult memories, sometimes there are very pleasant memories, nice things, and sometimes they're just neutral, but it's very powerful. They're there in a very vivid way. What they mean or what we should do with them is variable depending on what you're trying to do in your life. And if you're going to psychotherapy regularly or to a Jungian psychotherapist, an analyst, they might have a heyday, you know, and they just like, wow, let's really kind of think about this and look at the meaning, the symbolism, and all that's like dreams almost. So there's all kinds of, you know, there's multiple possible approaches of how to do something like that. What you describe in part was not just the surfacing of the memory, but you getting swept into it very strongly. And anybody who meditates knows they're getting swept off into thoughts, sooner or later, more often sooner. And so that getting aware of what that's like to be pulled into thoughts or images or something, and to recognize how that's happening and learn how to pull yourself out of it is a very important part of the training. So you don't want to be seduced by the strength of the pull or the strength of the images to follow and stay in there because you've lost your presence. So you want to come out and learn how to do that. And here's a little metaphor that I like around the surfacing of memories that happen in meditation. I mean, sometimes it's very helpful. I've had memories that were actually arose in meditation because something really nice was happening in meditation, and those memories somehow had a similar feeling. And so it was a kind of a language of memories, kind of a language of putting a word on it, a concept to it, or associating it. And it was like reclaiming really nice childhood experiences that I had forgotten about. So it has a, you know... So when you do meditation practice, mindfulness meditation, here's an approach towards things like that. And that is, be fine with it, that you have the memories arise. But generally, look at it upon it in a friendly way, like it's beneficial to it to happen. But don't stay involved. Just say, oh, look at that memory, great. And let it go. And then continue. And here's the analogy. You put your dirty clothes in the washing machine, and you put in some soap, and you turn it on, and the water goes in. The water agitates the soap and the clothes, and the dirt comes out of the clothes into the water. You open up the lid, and you look in the water, and it's dirty. And most people don't complain. Like rather, you're happy. Great, they're leaving the clothes. And then that gets drained out, the rinse water comes in, and it gets a little bit dirty, and you're glad because it's getting cleaner. And it does a few times, and finally the water's more or less clear because, you know, and each time that it's a little bit dirty, it drains out. And then eventually the clothes are clean. So meditation is the washing machine. And mindfulness is the soap. And your mind is like the clothes. And so you sit down and meditate, and I shouldn't say you get agitated, but you know, you kind of do your thing, and the gunk of the mind gets released, and the water is consciousness. So the gunk, the memories, you know, whatever it might be, the good ones, bad ones, that get released into the water of consciousness. Once the dirt has left the clothes and gone into the real water of the washing machine, the work of getting the clothes done is kind of been done, right? So once the memories have been dislodged and come into consciousness, what needed to happen has been done. It's finished. You don't need to do anything more. it's like you don't have to reflect on it, you don't have to look at the meaning of it, you don't have to do something with it, because what had to happen has been done. The work's been done. Then just let it, let the drain cycle do its thing. Just let it go. So there's space for whatever is supposed to happen next. So that's my approach to these kinds of things. You know, it's a good, you know, it's basically good that they surface, and generally just let them go.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was a perfect question because I have a really similar
question. Is it on the light? Yeah, okay.
Is it on? There. Yeah. Is it working now? Okay, so lately, when I meditate, I'm getting better at being in my body, and it feels, you know, it feels wonderful. But then I feel like I'm bumping up against, like, emotions from the past because unfortunately I've had a lot of times in my life where it feels like catastrophe was just about to strike, and sometimes it did. And so now I feel like I'm bumping up against those feelings, and they're really uncomfortable. And I try to be with them, but you can only do it for a certain period of time.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So,
yeah. So it's similar, you know, the emotion, that's memories, emotions can get dislodged at some point. And many people have a backlog of repressed emotions, you know, tucked away emotions, things that never really been resolved, unresolved feelings or emotions from something in their lives. And so as we sit and meditate, the thing that keeps us distracted or keeps us from giving space for them to bubble up goes away. So like if we're constantly thinking and planning and anxious about things, it's kind of like we have a lid on the things that are deeper down. And so the mind, the thinking, the surface mind has to get quiet and feel more relaxed and feel more safe for some of the deeper things to begin to surface. And so it's not uncommon for people to have sometimes very important experiences of meditation of deep calm or deep understanding, deep release, deep experiences of freedom. And then what follows that is a period of strong emotional, psychological material bubbling up. And they say, I'm going backwards, they say. You know, how could this happen? But actually they're going forward. It's just that they've now been able to contact a deeper layer of the mind that they couldn't contact before. And so they have to house clean. So here's another analogy. And it has the same point. Just recognize it. And don't have to do anything about it. But stay present and mindful. You go into a tall building, and you get into the elevator. You want to go to the top floor, which is a great view. So you push, top, and it goes up. But at the second floor, the elevator stops, and doors open up. And there's this beautiful room with good food and music and wonderful people, and it's a whole like little universe. So you get out of the elevator and you explore, and it takes a few, years to kind of explore that room and all the people there and the food. They have a lot of food. And then you said, wait a minute, I was going up to the top floor in the elevator. So you go back in the elevator, you push top, and you go in. And it opens, and the doors open to the third floor. And there's an all-out war. The people are angry, and, you're wrong, I'm right. And you say, I better go and help, because someone's in trouble, and they'll help decide who's right and wrong. And you spend a few years kind of on that floor. And then the elevator. So you go. So it's normal for the elevator as it goes, up, that the doors open and you see what's there. But the good thing is that the elevator is the process that keeps you going. Stay in the elevator. And the mindfulness is the elevator. So if these emotions arise, welcome them. It's okay. They can be difficult. They're probably not arising for you until you're ready to meet them. And they need to be met. But stay with the mindfulness. You don't have to analyze them, try to figure them out, try to fix them, make them go away, decide which one is right and which is wrong. Just keep stay in the elevator, which is means just stay noting them. Be aware of them. Just stay in the knowing, in the mindfulness. You don't have to do anything else.
For me, when I feel like there's a, to get to that place, there's an amount of trust.
Yes.
You know? And I feel like this really, it like bumps up against that trust. It's like, oh no, you shouldn't trust this, because this is, you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's no hurry. And it's very healthy and appropriate for you to feel you have permission and the ability to pull away from them. And you don't have to go into things which you don't feel ready for. And there's no requirement, and no one's forcing you in this practice to kind of delve into these difficult psychological, emotional things. And so if you feel like you don't have the trust, you're not ready for it, or it's just scary, it's actually very healthy to know that you can open your eyes, you can take a deep breath, you can look around, you can go defrost the freezer. You know, because you don't require... And then having confidence that you can do such things and that you're not trapped by them, then you might have more confidence to stay with them longer. Okay, I'm going to stay 1 minute longer. Oh, that worked out okay. I'll do another 30 seconds. That worked out okay. And then that's enough for today. And then you pull out or switch to do loving kindness practice or do something else. But it's important to respect this and not... There's no need to be force your way into it before you think you're ready. That's good. One more, please, and then we'll stop.
Gil, you opened the talk talking about volunteering.
Yes.
So my question is kind of related to that. So I would really like to volunteer at IMC, and there's a wonderful desire there. And yet, I feel like I'm at a moment in my life where I'm spread very thin, and I'm sure this relates to a lot of other people. So I'm a young mother with a baby, and then I'm defending my dissertation this term. You know, I'm a spouse, I have a household. So how does one hold all these different aspects of the self?
As compassionately as you can. I think really you need a lot of care, a lot of kindness for all this. I mean, it sounds like you have your hands full. And chances are, if you have that much going on in dissertation, that none of it is ideal. None of it is working just right. There's always a little bit compromised, a little bit, you know, not enough time for this, not enough time for that. And so to hold that, you know, that's the way we started off this evening, where I said that you become freer when you realize you can't have it perfect. And so what does it mean to become more relaxed, more at ease with the whole show, and how do you balance, how do you find balance within it? And one of the ways is to have a lot of positive self-regard, a lot of compassion, kindness to yourself and those around you. And try to be wise about how you spend your time. Be very careful not to do too much. I think, thank you for being interested in volunteering at IMC, but here in your life, I think it's undharmic to come here and volunteer. And it's probably for your life. I'm happy you're here today, but it's probably undharmic for you. It's anti-Buddhist for you. if you came on Friday to Dharma Practice Day, because the whole day, you know, and you have all this other stuff to do, So too much dharma, you know, is not dharmic sometimes. So I think that your life is, you know, sounds like a rich, important part of your life, time in your life. So I would hope that whatever you've learned about practice, for you to realize that you've been given opportunities on a silver platter to practice it. The life you have is your meditation hall.
And just to leave the desire there then for volunteering or for being more?
I think so. I mean, maybe it's not the time to volunteer, but I think to feel positive about yourself that you want to volunteer, it's an act of generosity. Feel happy about that you have that. Feel more happy that you have the wish than discouraged that you can't fulfill it. It's a beautiful thing. And then, you know, if I mean, you could talk to someone like me or someone else. Maybe there's some little way that you can volunteer that can make a difference, that works for your life. It could be that, when you do come here, that this place could always use more actively friendly people. So just smile to the people who come here. Say hello. Be the volunteer greeter for, two or three people as you come in. There's all kinds of small ways that might work for you if you would like to do it, and we can explore. Okay, so I hope this was nice for you to do this, the different format, and I certainly appreciated a lot hearing those of you who spoke up, and maybe that represents a little bit some of the interests or concerns of the rest of you. I hope it was relevant, and I hope that you all get a nice deep sleep after the Labor Day weekend. And so you can start your week well. Thank you.